Chapter 1. Setting the Stage. A quote from Thomas Edison. I never failed once. It just happened to be a 2,000-step process. Since you turned the page from the introduction, I'm assuming that you have either decided to raise outside funding for your venture, or you first want to learn more about the whole process so that you can make that determination. But since I don't know your current starting point, let's just start at the beginning. Bootstrapping. With as little as it costs to get a software startup off the ground these days, many entrepreneurs start off as bootstrappers rather than fundraisers. Bootstrapping is when your company supports itself on existing or personally available resources rather than external sources of capital. Many startup ventures are initially bootstrapped until a sufficient business plan is developed and some minimal level of validation exists in order to attract investors. There's nothing wrong with bootstrapping, but staying in that mode for too long can carry some consequences that you should understand if you're just getting started and later plan to raise money from investors. There are many different methods of bootstrapping. For example, living off your savings account so you can work full-time on your startup venture is bootstrapping. Borrowing against your 401k retirement account to pay your bills while working full-time on your startup venture will cause you to incur debt and might not be recommended by your financial advisor, but it is bootstrapping. Working on your startup venture during nights and weekends while funding it with income from a day job is bootstrapping. Selling your car, leasing out your garage apartment, and auctioning off your valuable comic book collection to pay for your business expenses is bootstrapping. Secretly selling your spouse's car and auctioning off his sentimental family heirloom paintings might cause a divorce, but if you use the proceeds to fund your venture, it is bootstrapping. Convincing others to work on your venture for no cash compensation while combining with any of the previous options is badass ninja bootstrapping. What about investing your own capital to fund the engineering work to build a prototype of the product? That's not bootstrapping. It's self-funding. What about friends and family funding? Borrowing money from Aunt Sally and Uncle Fred, or convincing some sorority sisters to make a small investment to help you out, is not bootstrapping. Instead, it's an external investment, just like borrowing money from a bank or convincing an investor to write a check. I mention this because I often hear entrepreneurs brag about bootstrapping all the way to their product launch, only to later discover prior investments from friends and family. I tip my hat to their accomplishment and then inform them about my definition of bootstrapping. Okay, you get the idea. It's less important to have an official definition than it is to evaluate and understand the commonalities among the various methods and approaches to bootstrapping. We often refer to bootstrapped ventures and bootstrap-minded founders as scrappy. There are definitely benefits of being scrappy in the early days while you're still trying to figure things out. But there are downsides that need to be understood as well, especially if the bootstrapping continues for a long period of time. Benefits of bootstrapping. Many of the successful entrepreneurs that I respect the most are consummate and repeat bootstrappers. In fact, they take great pride in letting you know they're a bootstrapper. If you look, you'll find them in your own community. Before we talk about how long to bootstrap, let's review some of the biggest benefits of bootstrapping. Some of you will be able to skip the bootstrap phase altogether for one reason or another, and that's great. But you'll miss out on at least some of the benefits. Bootstrapping forces founders to find and attract other team members that have genuine passion for the problem being solved versus those looking for a paycheck. It causes hyper-focus on making rapid and sufficient progress to either be able to get funded or start bringing in revenue from product sales. It forces a detailed understanding of exactly where every dollar is being spent and its specific value to the mission. Bootstrapping fosters maximum creativity, flexibility, and instincts for survival. It avoids investors telling you what to do, giving you a hard time about the decisions you're making, or asking for a bunch of updates. Future investor prospects will be impressed by your passion and personal commitment to the venture, as evidenced by your bootstrapping phase. It is also true that a phase of bootstrapping comes with no dilution. In other words, you and your co-founders get to divvy up 100% of the equity. But there's a reason that I mentioned the dilution benefit last. Please don't extend your bootstrap phase as long as possible just to avoid dilution. If your business venture is best developed and grown by taking on some investment, you will be happier and richer in the long run if you do so. One of my favorite sayings is, optimize for growth, not dilution. You would much rather have a single-digit equity stake in a venture that eventually exits via acquisition or IPO at a valuation of $1 billion than having double-digit equity in a venture that crashes and burns or exits for $2 million, $10 million, or even $50 million. Let's pause for a definition of dilution. Dilution is the result of an activity that causes a shareholder's equity to be reduced. Since equity is calculated by dividing a shareholder's quantity of shares by the total shares held by the company, the most common causes of dilution involve issuing additional shares of stock into the company. This could happen as a result of raising an equity round of funding or needing to create a new stock option pool with available shares of stock. In both cases, the number of issued shares increases, and this causes each of the previous shareholders' equity positions to be diluted. How long should you bootstrap? To answer this question, I need to set aside ventures that are planned to organically become profitable and sustainable on their own. Instead, I want to describe the more traditional tech startup scenario of pursuing multiple rounds of funding over time to grow aggressively and eventually reach a big exit. I usually recommend bootstrapping at least long enough to gain sufficient evidence that your solution is desirable, which means your target customer wants it bad enough that they're willing to pay for it. It's also beneficial if you're able to prove that the solution idea is feasible, which means it can be built to deliver the intended benefit. That doesn't necessarily mean you will end up with a version 1.0 product ready to launch after the bootstrapping phase, but rather that you should have enough proof that there's minimal technical risk. With both desirability and feasibility validated, or mostly validated, you still have a long way to go before you've grown a great company that's viable, scalable, and sustainable, but you are considerably less risky than before desirability and feasibility were validated. And that means you could be ready to pursue a round of funding. There are dozens of reasons why you still might not be successful getting funded, but that's a topic for a future chapter. Most startups that follow this approach will raise their first round of funding to launch the product and seek hints of proof of viability. Viability means the customer acquisition model yields a customer lifetime value, also called LTV, that is greater than the customer acquisition cost, also called CAC. Not just a little greater, but sufficiently greater to cover the costs of the other functions that aren't related to customer acquisition, as well as various other operational overhead. The dangers of bootstrapping too long. From time to time, I come across startups that have been in bootstrap mode for a seemingly long time. You might be thinking that with all of the bootstrapping benefits I listed earlier, why not stay in this mode as long as possible? There are a few reasons to consider if you plan to raise funding from investors. Slow progress for too long. While in bootstrap mode, your financial resources are limited enough that your progress is also limited. If that goes on too long, investors might ask, how is it that you've been working on this for almost 2.5 years and only have 15 customers and $10,000 in monthly revenue? Investors like to connect many dots, but when they connect yours over a long period of time, the slope of the curve isn't very interesting. Mindset. The processes, culture, and general mindset of bootstrappers is fairly different from those that are funded and dialing in a big outcome. Staying in the bootstrap mode too long can cause that mindset to sink in to the point that investors are forced to wonder if you'll be able to shift multiple gears directly into a big outcome mentality after getting funded. Assumptions. Investors can easily assume your business venture went through a significant pivot, multiple pivots, a co-founder breakup, unsuccessful prior fundraising attempts, and so on. It's even possible that some of those things are exactly true and cause the bootstrap phase to last longer than intended. But investors will often pile on additional negative or skeptical assumptions, overshadowing whatever you choose to reveal. They might assume the market is too small or doesn't sufficiently suffer from the stated problem. Or they might even assume you're not the right team to grow a successful company. As I hope you've concluded, bootstrapping during the early days until you've mostly demonstrated desirability and feasibility for your business venture can be a great thing. But too much of a great thing can turn into a bad thing. Compare notes with your co-founders and trusted advisors so you have a general strategy and plan for your bootstrap phase. Once you're ready to take on your first round of investment, prepare for a change in mentality. You will have obligations and accountability to outsiders, namely your investors. What's in a name, anyway? The name of a round of funding is often used to describe the evolutionary phase of a startup. If I told you about a startup and described them as pre-seed versus Series A funded, you probably form a mental image about the company along multiple dimensions. What's interesting is how different people can have fairly different mental images of the same funding phase. That's because there are wide variations in the uses of these descriptors, and they also change over time. Around the turn of the recent century, a Series A was raised well before a product was launched. Back then, the concept of a pre-seed funding round didn't even exist. Since I use these descriptors throughout the book, I need to provide my own parameters so that you know where I'm coming from. Just realize you will hear about and read different interpretations, which is only natural for the dynamic world of startups. The best way to visualize a hypothetical startup's evolution is to start with the most pristine, but least likely, path from the idea phase through Series A funding. For this, I will use the metaphor of shifting gears through the evolutionary phases. The idea phase starts before raising money, while the next three phases each commence with a fundraising activity. The new funds provide the needed fuel to accomplish whatever will be needed to reach the sweet spot for the next round of funding. With each such boost of new fuel, the startup is able to shift a gear to move faster and do more things concurrently. You might notice that the sequence of funding stages I describe ends with a Series A funding. Successful startups that want or need continued growth capital will later raise a Series B, Series C, and beyond, unless or until they no longer need external capital to fuel their growth or become sustainable. Idea. The idea stage doesn't usually start with or require external funding. Instead, it is the phase when your original idea gets formulated into an initial business plan, and also when co-founders are sometimes recruited to the venture. It involves lots of customer discovery interviews and personal soul-searching to determine if the venture is worth pursuing in the first place. Bootstrapping is the most common method of funding this phase, and tons of startups never successfully exit this phase. Pre-seed. In the still early days, as you approach pre-seed funding, you have a developing idea, but probably not even a working prototype. You need funding to build the prototype, or a clunky, buggy, ugly, but minimally functional, minimum viable product, or MVP, so that you can prove feasibility, which means, can it be built, and possibly start to get a sense for desirability, which means, does anyone want it bad enough to pay for it? During the idea phase, you should have completed enough customer discovery to refine the problem statement and to derive a huge list of assumptions as the starting business plan. The pre-seed funding stage probably involves some planned continuation of bootstrapping in order to reduce the amount of external funding needed and the first outside funding from friends and family and maybe some angel investors. You will be raising money mostly based on hope, vision, promise, and potential. Let's call those HVPP for short. Investors will also highly evaluate you and your other team members' skills, experience, drive, and passion. Let's pause for a definition of angel investor. Angel investors, often called simply angels, are high net worth individuals who allocate a portion of their personal net worth to investments in early stage company ventures, such as startups. Many angels earn the moniker by also serving as an advisor to the startups they invest in. Startups entering this phase don't have much in the way of operational maturity or method to their madness. It's possible they have an initial product development methodology and other very basic business processes, but since there isn't really any business yet, excessive processes and procedures just seem like unnecessary overhead. Pre-seed funding rounds don't usually raise enough money to pay more than the smallest of salaries, which means most or all of the team members will still be working part-time on the venture. Some pre-seed investors might require that at least one team member convert to full-time after the funding so as to demonstrate a real commitment. A pre-seed funded startup spends most of its time getting the product into a form that's ready to launch, but probably only has some basic form of product development methodology. Lining up the first beta customers is a key focus, and there should be time spent defining the initial strategy for acquiring customers and pricing the product. Seed. To move from pre-seed to seed funding, you should have at least a working prototype product, your MVP. While working on your MVP, your product development methodology should have matured to the point of having a rhythm to your various product iterations. It is possible that you stretched your pre-seed stage long enough to actually get a version 1 product launched into the market and with some first paying customers. If not, that will be a key theme for your seed round. Seed investors will expect to see a fairly developed business plan and will closely evaluate the attributes of your team. The business plan should have matured to include important insights from your customer discovery, market size research, plans for customer acquisition, and 1 to 2 years' worth of financial projections. But you still have a lot of theories and assumptions that need to be validated. The investors can at least touch and feel your product and get a sense for how smart and driven your team is. But there is still some HVPP being evaluated. A seed-funded startup usually has founders working full-time, but at way less than market-rate salaries, as well as some number of part-time employees and advisors that are equally passionate about the mission. New members get recruited to the team in order to fill various gaps and to allow the founders to each focus their energy on a smaller subset of the business. Everyone still wears multiple hats, just fewer of them. This slightly expanded team focuses a lot of attention on further proving desirability and starting to test for viability, which translates to determining if there is a customer acquisition model that is sufficiently efficient and effective. It is common for the pricing strategy and general operational maturity to get refined during this phase as a result of repeated customer interactions throughout the sales cycle. You will start to get good at measuring and analyzing your unit economics for the customer acquisition-related functions. And hopefully, you will start sending monthly updates to key stakeholders so they can better follow your progress. This includes both existing and potential future investors. It also means establishing and managing the business around a set of key performance indicators, or KPIs, for each function. A startup should dramatically mature during the seed stage. Because of this, getting from the initial round of seed funding to the sweet spot for a Series A often takes long enough that a single round of funding is not sufficient. As a result, this total phase often involves multiple rounds of funding, such as Seed 1 and Seed 2, each representative of a different set of accomplishments and operational maturity. Series A. A Series A is usually the first equity round of funding for a startup, and therefore, often the first round that involves an institutional investor, such as a venture fund. To catch their attention, you'll need a fairly complete operational dashboard with trended results for all KPIs. You should have regular strategy and planning meetings leading into a Series A, and you might even have practiced holding quarterly board of directors meetings, even if just with the founders and one or two investors. Let's pause for a definition of equity round. An equity round is one in which an ownership interest or equity in your company is sold to the investors. In order to calculate the amount of equity the investors will get, the company must first be valued. It's like being assigned a price tag. For this reason, we also refer to such rounds as a priced round. Coming into a Series A, most key functions will be filled with full-time employees. The total team size might be as small as 10 or as large as 30, depending on the company's business model. A lot of Series A investors want to see $1 to $2 million in annual revenue because that is a level that demonstrates a repeatable and at least somewhat predictable customer acquisition process for most business models. Those targets can vary widely depending on the type of business, such as software versus hardware, B2B versus B2C, etc. So only take it as a broad rule of thumb for stage setting purposes. A Series A funded company continues significant focus on customer acquisition and revenue growth. I often use a spinning flywheel metaphor as the objective. You want to get a single flywheel spinning as efficiently as possible before seeking other expansion opportunities. Series A funded companies often expand along some aspect of the business plan, such as the product line, target customer, geographics market, etc., to help accomplish the growth objectives. A first, truly strategic partnership often enters the picture, and if so, energy is applied so that it starts bearing fruit. Beyond Series A. Although the next phase is not the focus of this book, you should assume that with each subsequent round of funding, the company reaches new revenue milestones and new levels of operational maturity. The specific priorities for any given Series B funded or later startup vary greatly because of the wide variances of business models and associated company operations. Regardless, the purpose of subsequent funding rounds is continued growth and possibly a pursuit of profitability and sustainability. Beyond Series A, you'll have experienced executives on the team, and one will possibly take over as the new CEO. Multiple evolutionary paths to startup greatness. How many times have you read about a rocket ship company that's taking over the world? You get green with envy after imagining what it would be like to sit on that rocket ship and experience the near flawless execution that enabled their success. Fundraising was probably a breeze, and the best talent in the industry flocked to the company. What a utopian picture! But deep down, you know it virtually never works like that. The evolutionary paths to startup greatness are something just shy of infinite and very rarely in a continuous, positive sloped line. You'd be amazed to know how many supposed overnight successes were 10 years in the making, and with lots of twists and turns along the way. Your venture might have already encountered some twists and turns, and I want you to know that's totally normal and won't go away. Changes of direction. The best startups are adaptive, flexible, learning organisms. When they hit a dead end or some important assumption gets invalidated, they make an appropriate adjustment that's often called a pivot. While some pivots are actually just a minor tweak or fine-tuning, others are fundamental enough to the overall business plan that the company finds itself taking a few steps backwards before being able to step forward again. A pivot prevents making the planned gear shift and instead forces going around a metaphorical roundabout. This circular motion can continue multiple times before being ready to shift gears and move to the next phase. And if you're concluding that too many times around the roundabout without fresh funding could kill the company, you are correct. Even with fresh funding each time, you will feel the pain of additional dilution that otherwise wouldn't have been felt. But we do whatever it takes to stay active and gain our most valuable resource, time. Bridging phases. Sometimes, actually oftentimes in the early days, we exhaust the available funds from the previous phase and discover that we haven't reached the sweet spot for the next phase. This means the next category or class of investors won't yet be excited enough to invest. But since we need extra time in order to reach that point, we need to raise additional funding. We typically call that a bridge round. It is intended to bridge the identified gap. Such funding can be required even after the company is generating millions or even tens of millions in annual revenue. Bridge rounds can also be very distracting, and because of that, the sooner you see the need coming, the better. This means you need to get good at forecasting revenue, expenses, product roadmap enhancements, new business partnerships, and the like. Skipping a gear. Have you ever skipped a gear while driving a car with a manual transmission? Doing so usually starts with achieving high enough RPMs while in one gear to be able to skip the next one. In other words, skipping straight from first to third gear. What does this have to do with a startup venture? Well, like the metaphor suggests, there are times when a startup achieves so much acceleration and traction during a particular phase that they get to leapfrog over the next traditional round of funding. They still raise a round of funding, but a super hot idea phase startup might be able to skip a pre-seed round of funding and go straight to a seed round. It's also possible that a hot pre-seed funded startup might be able to skip straight to a Series A. These leapfrog opportunities are mostly only possible in the early phases of a company, and not really something we talk about for companies that are generating millions of dollars. But just imagine the numerous benefits of being able to leapfrog. Multiple interested lead investors and more favorable terms, more attractive to prospective employees, and less equity dilution, just to name a few. I bet you thought I was going to say it offers a faster path to $100 million in revenues. Yes, that too. Numerous scenarios. At the outset of this section, I suggested there are nearly infinite evolutionary paths for any given startup, and I expect now you see why. Multiple pivots and bridges are possible, including during the same phase. Hopefully, either are later offset by a leapfrog, but those are very unusual, so don't count on one to save you. To demonstrate how dramatically different the paths can be, following are two scenarios, one that we would all like to experience, and another that is a little more typical. Shockwave VR. 1. Idea phase. 2. Leapfrog to seed phase. 3. Gear shift to Series A phase. 4. Gear shift to Series B phase. Shockwave AI. 1. Idea phase. 2. Pivot. 3. Gear shift to pre-seed phase. 4. Pivot. 5. Bridge to seed phase. 6. Pivot. 7. Bridge to Series A phase. 8. Bridge to Series B phase. The differences are possibly obvious, and you can imagine the extra time and funding it took Shockwave AI to approach their Series B phase. But for fun, let's associate some assumptive metrics with each possible path through the evolution. We will use the following assumptions key. The idea phase lasts 3 months and carries a fundraising unit of 0. The pre-seed phase lasts 6 months and carries a fundraising unit of 1. The seed phase lasts 12 months and carries a fundraising unit of 3. The Series A phase lasts 24 months and carries a fundraising unit of 12. Each pivot lasts 50% of the time for that phase and carries a fundraising unit equal to 33% of the phase. Each bridge lasts 33% of the time for the prior phase and carries a fundraising unit equal to 33% of the phase. If we apply the above assumptions to the two scenarios and round off the final numbers, here is the result. Shockwave VR, 39 months and 15 fundraising units. Shockwave AI, 70 months and 23 fundraising units. I know this was just a hypothetical exercise, but I hope it helps you see the dramatic time and funding impact that repeated pivots and bridge rounds can have. One company got to a Series B in a little more than 3 years, while the other took almost 6 years and required 50% more funding to get there. Summarizing startup success. If anyone hands you a startup rulebook to follow or suggests there is a singular path to greatness, don't walk away. Run! This includes many things related to both fundraising and company operations. Even the ideas and best practices that I describe in this book are based on generalizations and my personal observations of several hundred startups over the past 19 years. One secret to your success will come from educating yourself on the fundamentals for best funding your venture while adjusting and adapting to your own situation. Your evolution over time never, ever plays out as originally predicted. Your path will be more of a winding and bumpy road than a perfect straight one. The less winding and bumpy, the better, but there will be curves, bends, hills, and gullies that weren't originally anticipated. As a result, flexibility and adaptability are superpowers that are either ideally exercised or must be quickly developed for basic survival and also future success. If you decide to bootstrap your business venture during the very early days, great. It is nothing to be embarrassed about. In fact, this usually should be celebrated. It offers a lot of value to the founding team and early company culture. The entrepreneurs I admire most are consummate bootstrappers. The key is to determine when to evolve out of bootstrapping mode, assuming funding is needed to advance the business at the desired pace. In the next couple of chapters, I will describe ways of planning for the various fundraising campaigns as your company evolves. Doing so will help keep your navigated path as straight and smooth as possible. That translates to needing less funding overall and more quickly reaching important evolutionary milestones along the way to building a great company. Aha moments. 1. There are countless ways of bootstrapping a venture, but receiving investment from friends and family is not one of them. 2. Equity dilution is almost always experienced as a result of issuing additional shares of stock into the company. 3. Validating the desirability and feasibility of your solution are the first required steps in the viability lifecycle of a new business. 4. The nomenclature used to describe the phase of a company or an associated stage of funding can vary. It has changed over time and will likely continue to do so. 5. Each stage of funding comes with a unique set of expectations related to team roles, operational maturity, and business results. Raising enough funding to reach the sweet spot for each subsequent stage is a key to fundraising success. 6. Missing the sweet spot for a stage of funding might land you in the fundraising chasm, which is an awkward place to be for fundraising. 7. The sweet spot gap between the seed and Series A stages is so vast that many startups proactively plan 2 or more seed rounds of funding. 8. Business plan pivots and bridge funding rounds are tools to help a startup advance forward when things don't otherwise play out exactly as planned. Although they are common, they can be minimized via effective strategy and planning.